better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
We are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3,537 of the Survival Podcast. We have been doing this together a really long time, and for some reason today we will not be on Rumble because the Rumble source doesn't want to play nice, so I just shut it off there. So if you join us later and you hear the intro, that's why we're not there today, because I didn't want to do it. But we have a great show today. I put out some feelers a few weeks ago, maybe last month, toward the beginning of the month, about doing some shows on rabbits. I am a guy that likes to eat rabbits, but almost all the rabbit I've ever eaten, other than a few that were given to me, have involved a dog and a gun and shooting them in the field. Sometimes a shotgun, sometimes a .22. I've never actually raised rabbits. I know a lot about it peripherally, but since I don't do it, I wanted to bring some people on that did it, and I wanted to bring people with various different methods on so that you could listen to them and pick what works for you. So I had somebody kind of in your small homestead, but out in the country, and then I had somebody a couple weeks ago or last week that did colony rabbits on a true, like, you know, multi-acreage homestead. Now I've got someone who lives in the suburbs and is in the middle of an HOA. Now, it's not, from his notes, it's not like a crazy, complete lunatic blue hair HOA, but I'm sure it could still be a problem. But he's a student of the community, man, and he conducts status ninjutsu on a daily basis, either ignoring rules, working in secret, and doing things to not attract blue-haired Marthas. And he's able to raise rabbits. He's got about a 900-square-foot garden. He's producing a lot of his own food. And his property's 6/10 of an acre, so just a little over half an acre. There's a lot of people in this audience that probably live a lot like that. And you might find that rabbits are a really great solution. So we're going to bring on Mr. William Billy Witt in just a few moments. Before we do that, let us go ahead and take care of our sponsors, since they do a lot to help take care of you and make sure the show is here for you 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. You know, one of the reasons we're talking about rabbits is because they're made out of meat, and meat is the most nutrient-dense food on the planet, and it also tastes really good. There's the old joke, if God didn't want us to eat animals, what'd he make them out of meat for? Well, one of the things you can do with your meat is you can, that didn't sound right, let it go. Don't be a 16-year-old. David, we know you're laughing and giggling right now. One of the things you can do with really high quality protein is turn it into something called biltong. This is an ancient method of preserving protein. It's been around for a very, very long time. In its current form, it's a few hundred years old. It goes back to the Boers in South Africa, and it's a way of preserving specifically red meat, and it is just delicious. It doesn't take that long to make, but it does take knowing the process and doing it right. And Anton's Land of Biltong is where you can get it shipped to your door. Every 2 weeks, comes to my mailbox, is a pound of biltong, a half pound of Wagyu, and a half pound of regular Black Angus, and then a pound of doors, which are a South African dry sausage. It's kind of like you took biltong and made a sausage. It's not exactly what it is, but it's what it tastes like. You want to try this stuff. I'm telling you, get hooked on it. Check it out today. Anton's Land of Biltong, and as far as I know, he's still trying to get moved. He's trying to liquidate as much inventory as he can. He has a problem with the state, local government. He wants to move to his new location, and you can help him just by buying some biltong and getting a discount if you're an MSB member as well. And so you can fight the state, get a discount, and eat biltong. That's a good day. Check him out today. Again, antonslandofbiltong.com. Next up today, Fortress Canines Canine Academy from Joel Riles, where you can train your dog. Well, basically, you can train yourself so you know how to train your dog. Joel is an amazing dog trainer. He trains some of the best protection dogs on the planet, but the reality is, I don't care what you want out of a dog. It all starts with core obedience, and the methodology to get the dog there is always the same. What we want to do is create an opportunity, correct mistakes, and then condition a response by correcting the dog. It's 4 C's. Joel and I came up with that together a few years ago when he brought me my wonderful dog from Fortress Canine, Belle. Belle Spearco is a great member of the house now, and I've learned a ton. I grew up training dogs. I started training my first bird dog when I only had, you know, I was like, it's still like a, basically a preteen, like 12 years old, training Brittany Spaniels. And I have still learned so much from Joe Riles, and you can too. And if you want to see if it's right for you, if you go to canineacademy.us, there's a problem-solving library. It's basically a free course with some specific chapters in it where you can learn some of the most basic things, seven topics that you can learn about with training your dog completely for free. Never turn down a free education. Go take that course and see if it's right for you. And after that, you can decide if you want to get more training. But if you ask any dog trainer, the most difficult species they work with, it's not a German Shepherd or a Malinois or a poodle. It's a human being. We're the ones that screw up. So fix yourself and you'll have no problem fixing your dog. With that, let's bring Billy Witt onto the Survival Podcast, man. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Jack. I appreciate it.
Thanks for hanging out and waiting for me to get through our intro today. I appreciate that. Like I said, I've got you on to talk about rabbits, but I want to kind of start out with, who are you, man? Like, what's your professional life, and how did you decide you wanted to, like, produce your own food? Because I find most people aren't, you know, spacing out in study hall in high school thinking, when I grow up, man, I'm going to raise rabbits. So what led you down the path to, like, self-sufficiency?
Yeah, that's honestly, yeah, I'm right there with you. I definitely wish I was reminiscing about rabbits in study hall in high school. That would have made life a little bit more less hectic, to say the least. So honestly, I obviously work, I live in the Northern Virginia area, so I do work with the federal government. And one day, kind of sitting around, I just went down the rabbit hole, honestly, of homesteading. I've always had a garden. My mom had one growing up, nothing small. Maybe just a small 100 by 100 square foot. And so, you know, just more funsy stuff than any actual production. And so I just started looking up, you know, ways to improve my garden. And that honestly just took me down the wormhole. I ended up on, you know, like Mother Earth News and Grit Magazine. And through those, I got introduced to some of the more popular homesteading podcasts like Melissa K. Norris. And there's a couple others. But yeah, so that's kind of the start of my journey. And something I never realized I wanted to do. I was probably, oh my gosh, 26 or so at the time I started going down this wormhole. So, you know, married, I have four kids, you know, established in our suburban kind of life by that stage of the game. And now all of a sudden I come home to my wife and I'm like, all right, sweetheart, you know, the classic faux pas of we're moving to the country and starting a homestead in about 5 days. So let's go.
Okay.
Shockingly, she said no to that. A very quickly shot down. you know, I mean, my wife, she doesn't, I mean, we've had conversations and, God bless her. She indulges me and, supports me to an extent and more so just letting me do it. But she really has no interest in joining me, on this. You know, if I need help, she'll come out and give me some assistance, but that's pretty much the extent of it. She doesn't want to grow it. She doesn't want to butcher it. She doesn't. And all right, that's fine, sweetheart. Not a problem. I'll take care of it. Okay. So, you know, we're still in that process of our lives of just trying to figure out, you know, where do our two desires and likes meet? And because I want to be in the mountains with no one around me. She likes being in town.
Okay.
And that's actually kind of how we ended up where we are now. While we're in a neighborhood with an HOA, but we're in a very rural, small little town. I have farm fields on the backside of my house.
Okay.
yeah. So it's kind of a unique, interesting situation that was, you know, for the time met both of our wants, you know, gave me a little more land and that country feeling. I'm not dealing with people cause I'm a crotchety old man. And, you know, but now as I've gone down this path of wanting rabbits and more of the permaculture thing, and I actually want to expand, I'm starting to run into issues with the HOA a little bit. And like you said earlier, though, my HOA is not strict.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they, for the most part, they don't care as long as no one complains and it's not blatantly obvious.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, so it's not bad. It's not bad. But definitely things like livestock, rabbits and stuff of that nature. That would probably get next pretty quick.
Water trees around the inside of your fence that just grows up and you can't see it. Oh. You can't bitch, man.
I would love that. And that's one thing with my yard, I'm on a court.
Yeah.
And I have a very weird shaped yard. It's very, very long,
okay.
But very narrow, and it's more of a trapezoid shape. So it's like man, to fence this thing, I don't even know. It would be so awkward.
Also,
I can't.
It's not fenced. Ooh,
no, no.
That makes it harder with a
Yeah. So I'm very fortunate that in my neighborhood, I'm one of the few houses. I actually have a detached two-car garage.
Okay.
And that's where I do it. I have my rabbits in the garage, and I do the butchering down on the backside of the garage. So
no,
I'm pretty much – yeah, I'm pretty much covered. My neighbors, great relationship with them. They're aware of what's going on. We've actually had a couple rabbits escapes that my neighbors have helped capture. Oh, it was a fiasco. 3 days. It took us 3 days, but eventually my neighbor caught him.
I'm having two flashbacks right now. One is the movie Dickie Roberts where the pet rabbit died and they buried it. And the dog digs the dead rabbit up, and they think the dog killed it. So they like wash it and blow dry it, put it back in the hutch. When the neighbors come back, they start screaming deviled rabbit, and they move out. And then the other one is just kind of like you have to hide this stuff because it's – I call it Disney culture, right? People that grew up on Bambi. And when I go to the beach, like I'll catch fish and I just – if it's something I want to keep and eat, we just throw that in the cooler.
Right.
But we catch these little like 2.5, 3-foot sharks. And I'll only keep one of those or two of those through a whole trip.
Mm-hmm.
And you're allowed one a day. And these – they're black tips. There's more of them than there's bluegill in a park pond, right?
Right.
But when people see a shark, it's like you killed a dolphin. So when I catch one and it's like, oh, this one swallowed it. This is a good one to process.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just wrap it in a towel and I carry it like a football. You know, and I run up to the cleaning hut and I clean it when no one's looking. Because it's like I murdered a mermaid or something, right? And so we have to sometimes adjust to the environment around us. But it sounds like you've done a pretty good job with. What led you to rabbits? Was it fertility? Was it meat? Was it both?
It was actually a multitude of things. I mean, like many of your guests you've had on lately, they've all said, I mean, one of the nice things about rabbits is they really have so many benefits. A, just the price point.
Yeah.
You know, I think now, granted, again, I was very fortunate. I have a farmer friend of mine. She raises rabbits. And so I was able to, on the cheap purchase, I have 3 cages. I have 6 total, 3 in a row and then 3 more stacked on top. And I was able to purchase those from her for, I think it was about $100. And then another 100 for my breeding trio for my 2 does and a buck. And that, you know, that's all you need pretty much. I got in like what? A couple 5-gallon buckets and set up a little automatic watering system. So, you know, I have maybe, you know, $250 into my rabbit setup initially, somewhere around there. And I've added to it along the way is a lot of trial and error. I tend to be I'll think about a lot of things and then if I never do it, so I just jump in and figure it out along the way. So thus the escaped rabbits.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's cheap to get into, in all honesty. Obviously, we're dealing with the HOA. They're quiet. Being in the garage, you know, would I love to have them outside? That'd be great. But the garage is a good environment for them, right? They're sheltered from the sun. They don't have to worry about predators. My rabbits are really chill. I'm able to go in and handle them for the most part. I've had a couple ones that quickly went to freezer camp. But for the most part, they're great. They're relaxed. You know, I put up a couple fans for airflow. And they're content. And then obviously, I mean, meat production is almost second to none for your feed to weight ratio and just the sheer speed of their, you know, their ability
to make more
reproduce.
Rabbits.
Yeah. I mean, I don't breed mine aggressively. I breed I do a litter about every 4 months. So I'm still getting 18 rabbits per doe, which, you know, that's
per year.
Yeah. So I'm getting, 18 times 2 is what, 36 rabbits.
That's a lot
every year. Yeah, you know, one every other week or so.
Yeah.
It's not bad. And that's, like I said, with slow production, I could ramp it up a fun or two. But
you also have plausible deniability for the HOA. They're not a lot of stock. They're just funny bunnies.
Yeah, they're cute bunnies that, and we homeschool too, so they're cute bunnies. They're homeschool project.
Oh, they're a school project.
Exactly.
You can't screw with education. Do you hate teachers?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we've played that card at least once. We'll raise like hatched ducks or chicken eggs.
Yeah.
And so we don't keep them for long. It's a really cool program where we hatch them for the farmers. We, you know, the kids get to have grand time and then we give them back to the farmers.
Yeah.
And, we had someone complain about that once, and that was our thing. Like, look, it's a homeschool project. You know, they will go away, but we had them for, my gosh, probably a month or 2 months.
That's
before
awesome.
We returned them. Yeah. That's so, awesome. You know, again, kind of that, you know, like you say, that status jujitsu of workarounds kind of thing. So,
yeah. So can you talk about, I know you said you keep them in the garage, and I think it can actually be a real advantage because, like you said, you can keep, you're in Virginia, so it can get pretty damn hot.
Oh, gosh.
And it can get pretty damn cold. So yes. Having some level of climate control is helpful, but what's the setup itself look like?
So it's, like I said, it's gone through a few phases, but the majority main setup is I actually have, like I said, three cages and on two different rows, and I just hung chains down from my rafters, and so they're just hanging. I ended up buying some, was that just the super cheap pond liner, the DPE pond liner, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I put that up on the back wall so they don't spray all over my wall and ruin it, and did the same thing slanting down from the top cage to divert their waste. Down falls right back behind the bottom cage, and then underneath that I have four 40-gallon totes underneath it to collect everything. And that's my basic setup. I got a two 5-gallon buckets, one for each layer, and running automatic watering hoses through. So, I mean, it was pretty easy, and it started out with just, I'm a slight bit of a hoarder, so it started out with just junk I had in the garage that my wife is begging me to get rid of, so now I can finally say, ha, it paid off.
Yeah, yeah. So it doesn't sound like it takes up much space.
No, no. I think my cages are about 9-10 feet long total.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe about 2 feet wide total space. Like, it's just a small section of my back wall.
18 square foot.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing. It's nothing for my garage. Like I said, I mean, I still have, you know, like three metal shelves off to one side, and I have probably, I don't know, 10 foot on either side of these in addition to that. So, yeah, not a lot of space, really easy, really cheap setup.
Can you kind of talk about how you're doing your grow out then? So breed, you got your kits, they're nursing, they're ready to wean.
Yeah.
At some point they need to go away from mom, and have their own cage. I mean, how's that work?
So that's why I have the six cages total, and why, as much as I like to, I haven't really expanded yet to include a third doe.
Uh-huh.
Because I do about a 4-month rotation, somewhere in there. You know, it's about a 32 day gestation period.
Okay.
And then they're with the mama. I keep them on, you know, 6 to 8 weeks is about when I wean them. And at that stage, I'll move them to the top level of cages. And about week 10, they start getting a little big because I usually have about six per litter. Okay. So by that stage, I'll start spreading them out over the top three cages.
Okay.
And then I butcher between 12 and 14 weeks.
Okay.
You know, so they're about roughly about 5 pounds by that stage. So you get 2-3 pounds after you butcher them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really simple. And I just keep my buck in the middle, my two does on the side, and you know, every 4 months
you go back home.
Yep. Right? Like, yep. So it's a pretty easy rotation. You know, and keeping them separate like that. I know, like, again, you had the colony, a gentleman on the other day, and, you know, I like having them separate, like that control, and especially again with my limited environment, being able to control when litters are coming and having all that is critical. Because I bred too quickly at first, and I was quickly overwhelmed.
There's too much to deal with, too many.
Yes.
Processes.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, when I cull chickens or ducks, about six is all I want to do in a day. And it's not that it takes a long time or anything. It's just, it's not the most pleasant work.
No.
You know, and while you're doing it, you have flies bugging you and stuff like that. So I kind of want to get it done, get them chilled down and get on with it. And I probably process a chicken as fast as most people do a rabbit. Cause I don't try to get everything. I pluck the breast and I de-breast.
Yeah.
Pop out the leg quarters, and then the rest is for the dogs in the compost. I mean,
right.
Because they're culls. It's not, there's no world in which I'm going to be pulling back feathers off a chicken that's not a meat bird. Yeah. You know, it just ain't worth it.
I don't blame you for that. Yeah. It takes me, honestly probably between 5 and 10 minutes to do rabbit. I'll be honest, I'm not very fast. I've seen guys do it in less than a minute at a couple of the, you know, HOA conferences and stuff. But I'm about 5 to 10 minutes. You know, I'll be honest, like I said, I grew up in a suburban neighborhood. My dad thinks I'm a giant weirdo. He doesn't get me. As much as I love the man dearly, he doesn't understand me. You know, so this is very much the antithesis to my background. So that's been kind of a learning curve. I'll be honest. Like, I still, it's as weird as this sounds, I'll do the 6 rabbits or so when I do a litter, but it's emotionally exhausting for me because, you know, like you said, I'm willing to do it, but taking a life is never, and it should never be an easy thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it takes me time. Been 6 is kind of my limit, but it's really quick, you know, in all honesty. You kill them, you pull the skin off like a shirt, and you gut them. And honestly, I'm like you. A lot of it actually goes to my dog. And I know we'll kind of touch on that later, but that's another way I actually monetize them is through turn a lot of it to dog treats that otherwise would go to waste. So
Yeah. The same, like I said, same. We let dogs eat what they want, and then it goes in the compost. And I'm not exactly sure exactly what the breakdown schedule is, but I know by the time whatever was in the pit goes into the bioreactor and the bioreactor comes out, you might find a tooth or in this case, a beak, right? There's nothing left. Bones and everything are just gone.
Yep.
And then that's part of that whole circle of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm going to flag that one, but I think we're going to catch that one anyway here. What are some of the issues you have with your setup? You did mention you had some escapes. Did that occur with your breeders or your bunnies? And how did they get out? And was there anything else that you had to change?
Oh, yeah, there's been a couple of things. So I've had one of my breeders get out as actually my buck. He's a big fatty. And my hooks that came with them were just like simple springs. You stretch them, hook them onto the cage, done. And they worked really well until they didn't. So he actually broke it one day and was jumped out. Fortunately, the garage was closed. He was really easy to catch. Okay. Another positive of having them in the garage, it contains them very easily. But another thing we ran into is actually was with the babies. That's where the problem was. And I had two different issues. So the cages that I got from my friend, she had initially cut out a hole to have, you know, just the big automatic feeders right in there. Okay. I ended up taking those out and taking some of extra wiring, made a little cage to hold their hay from right in there. And it worked out great until the stupid teenage rabbits figured out they can scramble up through that hole and hop on out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And
so you had like kind of a chute you were...
Yeah, yeah.
Which worked, into.
Right, which worked great for the hay and everything, but it was like... And I didn't think about it at first because I'd had already put a couple litters through that system, no problems. And all of a sudden, one day, one of them figured it out, and now they all watched and learned, and they all started crawling out. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. So I'm sitting here scrambling, and I ended up getting just covered that up with some more wire. But so we had that, and then we also figured out that, again, because of those springs on the cage doors, well, the doors could come out, you know, probably an inch and a half, 2 inches away. So all the little ones would hop on out. And so now, you know, now I've got a carbine clip.
Yeah.
I put one up top and I'll slap one on the bottom, and that worked thankfully. I need to try and find maybe something better because those end up going bad pretty quick just from the acidity from the urine that hits them. But you know what? It's what, a $4 fix.
Yeah,
and I have to replace them every 6 months or so right now. So I'm still trying to think about how I want to manage that, but it's worked for now. The other big problem I ran into, and this was the watering system is, you know, I just had the rubber tubing, and man, I don't know how many times I would had it on top, and the rabbits would reach up and nibble on it, and you know, all the water would come draining out of the buckets, and I'd have to replace it. I had a board on there, but they still were able to knock it off and kept chewing. So I went through, oh my gosh, I don't know how many feet of rubber tubing until I finally just hung it on the front of the cages. And how it is, it just sits away. It dangles down beneath the bottom of the cage. And, you know,
they can't get it.
Exactly. So honestly, it took me way too long to figure this one out, but I got there in the end. Yes, yeah, so those have been, probably just the two biggest things as far as affecting the rabbits. And then the third little thing was really just the smell. You know, because like I said, I have just a 40-gallon tote down there collecting everything.
Yeah.
And I can't even remember where I got the idea. To be honest, it was probably listening to you or one of your guests speaking. But what I ended up doing is I just stacked the totes. I got a second one, stacked two on top, drilled holes in the one on top, so all the urine just drains through, and problem solved.
Okay.
Like, no problems,
so
really.
You got poo on the top, pee on the bottom, basically.
Right, yeah. And it's only, I mean, the gaps for the pee is maybe that big since I stacked the totes on top, but it's more than enough space. By the time the totes on top are full, you know, I got plenty of room. So that's controlled the smell and the flies.
That's good.
Yeah, which has caused problems. We actually had my daughter. So I have California New Zealand mixes,
okay,
and I also have a gray Rex. And so my Rex is beautiful. She always throws two white ones, two brown ones, two black ones. I mean, every time. And so one of my daughters kept one of the black ones for a pet. She's, you know, she's what, 12 now.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of her first foray. Hey, here's a pet for responsibility. And, and, so we had it outside while we're figuring out how to arrange the house inside to bring it in. And sadly, it got tagged by a bot fly. By a bot fly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it was one, I forget this specific breed, but it's one where, I mean, that larva is just
huge.
Massive. Yeah, really gross. And the problem with them is especially with rabbits, and it was right in front of its ear, right by its head and everything.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those things of, it's really dangerous to leave them in.
Yeah.
It's really dangerous to take it out.
Yeah.
And we tried to take it out, and I think I ended up breaking a little bit, which I can't remember the toxin or whatever, but basically it will kill the rabbit. And sadly that happened. So, we, like I said, that's one of the big reasons why we need to figure out that, that fly problem.
Which, because then you could end up with your whole colony, you know.
Right. Dealing with, yeah. So, but yeah, so fortunately, like I said, with the double layer buckets, it's really for the most part solved that fly problem. It's not bad at all anymore, thankfully. So,
and are you like using that fertility then with your gardening?
I do. Obviously I will take a lot of that and dump it straight onto to my beds. I usually do that towards the end of the gardening season, at the beginning of the season. But then a lot of it goes just straight into my compost bin. That really is the bulk, my bulk material for my compost bin. But yeah, so I'll do that. I spread around a lot of my trees. I actually killed off, probably a 30 by 15 foot patch of grass that I sowed Timothy hay that I grow. And, so I'll throw that down, to kind of fill and build up that fertility there as well. So, but yeah, I definitely produce a lot more than I would use just throwing it on the garden. It's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they are prolific poopers. I mean, they really are.
Prolific and very dirty. They like to waste a lot of hay. So it's a lot.
Yeah. I'm guessing the reason that you went with individual cages is, one, it's really easy. There's a template for it. But two, I don't even really think you have another option with your living situation.
I really don't. And in all honesty, though, even if I did, so, you know, if I had that, you know, nice 6-foot privacy fence where I can have a colony easily in my yard, I still probably wouldn't do it. You know, obviously, clearly people do it successfully, but you just hear of so many, especially with like coccidiosis being the big one. So you just have more disease pressure and issues with that, especially if it's not a mobile coop or pen, excuse me. And, you know, plus, like I said earlier, I like having that control, you know, where I know who's been bred, how long they have, you know, I control and dictate everything, not, hey, guess what? I have 8 more rabbits today. That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't have enough feed or anything for 8 more rabbits, but I've got them.
Yeah. I mean, that happens with birds, man, because they'll just go somewhere and make a nest and you don't know about it.
Right.
And when you
right.
find them, you're like, well, that's great.
That's cool.
Sort of. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't really planning on raising baby chickens in late November.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Like, what is wrong with you? Why did you do this?
Why?
You know, or you see one go broody in like January, you're like, what? Do you have a screw loose? You know, and if you're keeping them separate, like they can't.
Yeah, they can't. You don't like, and one of the things too is not only do they not, you know, you control the breeding, but one of the big problems I found out, rabbits, adorable, cute and fluffy. Monty Python and the Holy Ground was pretty much spot on. They are vicious killing machines. And like I said, one of my first doe, hit my chop lever there, excuse me. She was the first one that I ever butchered, but she was extraordinarily territorial. Every time you put your hand in the cage, she would scratch you, bite you. I've got scars from her. My daughter, she literally took a chunk out of her finger. That was kind of the line when she did that. But she would never breed with me. She was very aggressive to my buck, even taking her to his cage. She would get very aggressive towards him. And, you know, so with the cages, I don't have to worry about that aggression if that's an issue. Whereas colony, obviously, you know, they're more used to each other and they figure out their own hierarchy and territories and stuff, but there's still that issue and that initial someone's gonna get, you know, has to establish this somewhere. So it just solves that problem.
Yeah, definitely. I just have to bring something up on the screen here with you talking about that. You probably can already guess.
Oh yeah.
And we're not gonna tell anybody that's not on the video what it is, but It sounds like that rabbit might have been one of yours. Don't say it, because if you're listening to the audio and you want to see it, you got to come see it for yourself. We're not going to tell you what it is. And
just for fun,
I might keep popping up various versions of that thing. If I do, just keep rolling. And just got to incentivize people to come find the video if you're on the audio only, right?
Exactly. That is well worth it.
Let's talk about how you feed your rabbits. Are you doing pellets? Are you doing fodder? Are you doing a combo? I mean,
So I've actually tried a few different. Like I said, I've been raising them for about three. I think it's been about 3 years now, give or take. And I, for a time, I actually was on my 1/16 of an acre. I was mowing it. I had a little 21-inch Honda walk behind. I'd bag that sucker, throw it on an old pool tarp, dry it out, bag it, and I'd build my hay up. And I made all a year's worth of hay from my own yard.
Okay.
And I did the same thing. Took a lot of produce from the garden. I've planted some hybrid willows, things like that for fodder trees. And I also have some mulberries around the neighborhood that I'll go and get weird looks from as I – you know, take leaves and berries and sticks and stuff from them. So I fed a lot of it from them, but I do. It's just so time consuming. And like sure. I have a normal, 40-hour a week job with an hour commute one way. So I ain't got time for that. Yeah. And I'm very fortunate with where I live. I have access to I can get some high quality, non-GMO natural, rabbit pellets, a 50-pound bag for $25, super. And so for me, it just doesn't make any sense to feed them from my property. It was more of an experiment of can I, if I have to, you always say, just kind of preparing if times gets rough, what can I do?
Sure.
And, I proved it to myself. I can do it off the land. I don't have to right now. So I'm going to enjoy it while I don't have to.
I got you.
So
I do think probably one of the easiest ways to do that is what you were saying about making hay from the lawn. If you do that a few times a year, you can, even if you don't feed them 100%, you can really cut the feed bill, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And did you, when you started making hay, did you like do the whole mini hay bale maker or did you?
No, I looked into that. And honestly, I didn't realize there was anything like that until I had been doing this for probably about, this was into my second season that I was doing this, that I saw that. But honestly, I just, like I said, I got four kids. I have labor. So
we
would, throw it down on a pool tarp, toss it. And again, like I said, our summers are stupid hot out here. So it dries within a day or two.
Sure.
And I would just throw it into, if I had plastic, plastic totes, I'd shove into plastic totes.
Okay.
And whatever I didn't have, I had, just garbage bags. that I shove it into, and we're good. So I, you know, my wife
is good then.
Yeah, exactly. You know, my wife loved it. You know, having, you know, 40 some odd bags and totes shoved in the corner of the garage.
Yeah. But,
hey, I enjoyed it.
on the hay balers, you can make them out of plywood and all, but I saw one dude, all he did was use a tote.
Oh,
and
really?
He fried it, and he threw everything in the tote till the tote was stacked, and then he put two strings to make tied bales.
Right.
Like, draped over the sides. Then he had his kid, he took a piece of plywood that was about the same dimensions as the tote, laid it on the top so it was flat, had a kid stand on it, and tied off the bales to one side. So he left enough of a gap on the board that you could tie your knots without having the board in the way.
Right. Oh, that's a really
good
idea.
And it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty reasonably compressed.
I don't need perfection. I need, does it work?
Yep.
Sweet. That's perfect. Oh, that's a really good idea. I'm going to have to see if I can't find that video and do something like that.
Yeah. And even if you can't, it's not hard to figure out, man. It's a jigsaw to cut a piece of scrap wood. And you just have to leave, like I said, enough gap that when you're tying that baling twine, you can actually get to it.
Cinch it. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
It worked, you know?
Yeah. I love it.
We talked a little bit about using the fertility, but have you kind of like created any kind of integrated permaculture, you know, function stacking system in with the rabbits?
In all honesty, I mean, outside of using the fertility and then growing, you know, a lot of plants to feed the, at this stage, supplement the rabbits. Sadly, no, you know, I would love to, I can't remember who was it. You had him on, 3 weeks ago on the expert council talking about the mobile rabbit tractors. I can't remember who answered that question.
Was it Nick Ferguson?
I think it might have been Nick.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. You know, that's, I would love to be able to do that, you know, because I have behind my garden, I'm slowly building out a food forest. It's nothing crazy right now. I have eight trees or so growing, and, you know, working on getting all my understory established and going there. Like, I would love to have a rabbit tractor back there, to really integrate them, manage that, because it's kind of a pain in the butt to have to go back there and mow.
Yeah.
And that would kind of help, nothing crazy, but help with that a little bit, plus just more fertilizer, because like our soil around here is garbage. It's clay. That's all we have is just clay.
Yeah.
It's so
part of Virginia.
Yeah. You know, so, and again, this probably comes from me, you know, I just not having an idea of really how to better incorporate them into my systems beyond I got rabbit poop, which was great, and I can feed my rabbits, which is great.
Yeah.
That's kind of right now where I'm at. And, and you know, because a lot of it too is, A, obviously, I've got tons more to learn, and B, it's just from time. And to be honest, I have jumped in a little too deep at times. I've taken on too many projects, you know, fell into that typical trap. So I've just been so busy with everything else.
Yeah.
To not be able to sit down and really take my time, study, analyze, and figure that out. So
can you talk a little bit about how you process rabbits? Like you mentioned where you do it, but kind of like it's graduation day, 6 bunnies have to go to the freezer camp. What's that look like from start to finish?
Yeah. So like I said, it's nice and easy. I'll, you know, grab them from the cage, go right out the side door, and on the backside of my garage, I don't know why it's there, but I have a random like 2x12 that's probably like 10 foot long in my wall of my garage. No idea why, but I ended up building a basically a gambrel frame off of it. You know, just out of wood, and I have two little strings of slip knots. And I've tried dispatching a couple different methods. I tried the broomstick method, which I didn't like personally. It was just kind of a pain in the butt holding the rabbit down, getting the thing on, and, you know, without crushing it. And you know, I'm a big guy. I'm not exactly the most gentle of creatures in the world. So, so I don't do that. And then I did for a time, I had a dog choker that I had hung up, and I would just put him through the dog choker and
that worked.
And cervical and break it that way. But I ended up dropping that too, because again, I was having such a hard time finding that good, that that perfect, you know, pressure. Either I wouldn't pull hard enough and they'd basically be stunned, and I was still kind of new to it at the time.
Yeah.
So I thought they were dead, which they're not. So then you bleed them and then they start screaming, which is, you know, not great when you have.
Not good for blue hair Martha.
Exactly. In the way, yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. And then on top of it, I just, you know, you feel bad, but you want it to be a quick, clean kill.
You don't want to do it.
Yeah, so it was either that or now because I'm paranoid, I yank too hard and darn near, you know, decapitate them straight up. So, I actually ended up going to one of the Homesteaders of America conferences, and I think it was, I believe it was Daniel Salatin was doing a show there, butchering rabbits. And he just takes a pipe or whatever and bops them on back of the head between right behind their ears.
Yeah.
And that's it. So that's what I do now. I just have a lead pipe, and you know, just to be certain, I'll tap them twice with it. The first time, if it doesn't kill them, stuns them. Second time,
That finishes it.
Yeah. So it's quick. It's really easy. You just there's a nice little trick I saw too, and from Daniel was you grab them by right in front of their rear hips, and they'll just kind of dangle there.
Yeah.
For you know, you have probably, I mean, not forever, but you have probably five, 10 seconds where they just kind of dangle and freeze.
Yeah.
So you have plenty of time to get it lined up and done.
Wow.
Yeah.
A friend of my uncle's that did them, and he used a tire billy, pretty much the way you're describing right there. Mm-hmm. One good.
Yep.
Like we had a lot of uses for tire billies. One of them was we called it a catfish fixer.
Oh.
So when you pull like a 30-inch channel cat into a 14-foot boat, it's a problem. And if you give them a good whack, they just kind of straighten out and into the cooler.
Solves
and by
that
the time,
problem.
If they don't go out, by the time they wake up, they're chilled, so they're not doing anything.
You know? Oh, nice. Yeah. Kind of a big piece of metal. It solves a lot of problems.
Instrument, right. It's man's oldest weapon is a blunt instrument, probably a rock or a club.
Yep.
So that works. I guess that's what you settled on. Because I've also seen the thing like you bolted to the wall and you put them in there and you
The hopper popper.
Yeah, that's what they're called. And I don't know. I think there is something to be said for simplicity. You know.
You know, I thought about getting a hopper popper for a time, but I can't remember. What are they, like $100 or something like that?
Yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head. And I'm sure they look like they work great, especially nice and easy because it's just been pulled down and back and that's all she wrote. But you know what? You can't beat a $3 lead pipe. You know, done.
Yeah.
Like it's.
In Bitcoin, we call it the $5 wrench method, which is you give a guy a $5 wrench and you beat him until he tells you his passcode, right? Like there is a simplicity.
There is a way,
right? When you're doing this, have you had any issues with your HOA complaining because they know you're murdering a rabbit?
So fortunately, I have not, thankfully.
Okay.
But it's definitely something I'm very aware of because with my property, like I said, I'm on the back end of a court at the backside of a property with fields on either side of me. But there is a big strip of HOA easement that runs right behind my house. And I know people will sometimes walk their dogs back there and stuff like that. So it definitely is one of those on butcher day. I might have my children outside. Hey guys, keep a lookout if someone comes walking down this way. So fortunately we haven't had any issues with that. And then my neighbors, like I said, I'm very blessed with them. They're fantastic neighbors. Two of them are aware of what I'm doing. One guy, like he has a ball python, and for a time we're talking about if he'd like to buy a rabbit to feed the python on occasion.
Yeah.
He opted not to do that. He his snake liked the frozen rats and so it's like, all right, cool. And then my other neighbor who lives right next door to me, they actually just moved in from Washington. They're great people, but when they moved in, I was mildly annoyed because my former neighbor, again, really cool. He and I had all these arrangements. This was great.
Yeah.
I even went and cleared a big patch of just crap, and that kind of covered my property and his property, and planted a bunch of blackberries. So it's not so blackberry bramble back there. And I did that. And immediately after I did that, he put his house up for sale and moved. I'm like, you son of a gun. Come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, the new neighbors have been great. They're actually the ones who ended up having to, one of my rabbits got out and ran over and hid underneath their barn. And it's the wife, she ended up catching it after like 3 days. So yeah, you know, they're really good. They're good friends and have no qualms. So we're very lucky in that matter. Obviously neighbors can make all the difference. But so yeah, fortunately no issues yet. You know, knock on wood.
So we've clubbed the bunny, we've skinned the bunny, we've processed the bunny, and now we're going to eat the bunny. Do you have a favorite recipe?
So we actually have a couple. So the kids in the family, they're still, they'll eat the rabbit. They're still trying to get on board with the rabbit, and I'm still trying to learn to cook the rabbit because it's similar to chicken, but there's differences to it. And so the kids and the wife, they really like just grilled barbecue. Throw it on the... And simple, delicious. It's hard to go wrong with that, right? Mine, I don't really follow a recipe. I'm a very whimsical cooker. Sometimes it works out great. Other times we're ordering pizza. But I did one where I threw the couple rabbit legs, rabbit hindquarters in, and just a tomato sauce that I and put some lentils in it. And I let that stew for, my gosh, probably 6 hours or so. Dude, that was delicious. Super simple, but fantastic. And it's the only time I've ever eaten lentils and liked it. But we had a bag, and I'm like, we got to use this, love. So it's going in there. It was really good. First thing I ever cooked was, again, that dough that we butchered. It was just evil. She, again, no one in the family was really wanted to do it, especially by that stage. Like, we'd had her for a while. There was some semblance of attachment, despite her being, you know, a murder machine. And I ended up making a pot pie out of it. And, you know, oh, yeah, kids, it's chicken. Don't worry about it. They ate it. The pot pie was not very good. But, you know, but they were like, yeah, it's all right. And then I told them later on that, you know, what it was. And like, oh, my God, that's why it was so bad, Dad. It tasted so gross. I'm like, no, that's just because your dad doesn't follow recipes and just threw crap together and said dinner. But, you know, so yeah, I'd definitely try some. I got a bunch in the freezer and I just got to do some more recipes and figure it out. But right now, yeah, that tomato and lentils was delicious.
And for those not in the video, the fuckery with the rabbit gimmicks continues, and you're going to have to find it if you want to see it. anyway, we talked about how you're feeding them, but like, is there like cost per pound kind of matters if you're doing this? Like, is there any way other than feeding them off the land to reduce your production costs at all? I really don't think they have much of a production cost other than feed.
Yeah, I mean, that really is it. Once you get your initial setup, it's just feed. Like I said, I'm lucky. I don't know how it is in other places, but $25 for a 50-pound bag, and I think bales of hay around my place are going, you know, $5-6 for just a normal two-string bale. So I'll get maybe six of those, and it'll last me all year. So, yeah, pretty cheap. But as far as, you know, how do we monetize rabbits, obviously, the simple one is just sell, you know, you sell a couple of your rabbits from the litter. You know, you're getting anywhere between, I mean, I see them in range about $25 to $50, depending on the breed and pedigree and stuff like that. I sell mine for about $30 a pop. And really, I generally don't have any issues of selling, you know, at least one or two a litter. That's generally pretty easy to do, especially living out in the country where I do.
And are you selling basically live rabbits to people that want to breed?
I've had
processing and selling meat, because I found it's more profitable to do absolutely nothing and go, here's your rabbit, than go through all the trouble and try to sell a meat product.
Yeah. So first off, I would never sell a rabbit to a person, but 100% would sell a rabbit for dog food.
Okay. I got you.
You know, but there you're still looking at, I'm not positive because I've never actually done it, but you'd probably only be getting like $10.
Yeah,
so all the work of growing it out, butchering it, versus I can sell it at, you know, 8 to 12 weeks old for $30 and
exactly
be done, you know. So, but I'm still trying to figure out the how I'm actually going to market and sell them. Just with time constraints and stuff. Usually, sure. I just throw the rabbits up on Craigslist and say, hey, there you go. But I'm actually looking into selling, like I said earlier. I make a lot of stuff from dog treats. I mean, when you butcher a rabbit, there is actually a lot of waste. You've got, you know, you've got the hide, unless you're going to turn it, tan it, which at 12 weeks, it's not, it's really not thick enough to tan. Still on my bucket list to do one day, but yeah, so I'll actually just flip those inside out, twist them up, and dehydrate them to make rawhide chews. The ears, all four paws, those all come off, and same thing, dehydrate dog treats. I'll clip the nails to make sure he doesn't scratch himself up or anything like that. Same thing, the head. Depending on how lazy or much time I have, I'll sometimes just take the head, throw it in the freezer and call it a day. Sometimes I'll take a miter saw or whatever and saw it in half and dehydrate it to make it last longer with that. So you saw the heads. And then as well, when you gut them, you always have those, you know, that stomach flap skin. I know a lot of people, they like to fry those up. They really like them. I'm not too crazy. No one in my family's too crazy about them. So I'll basically turn them into glorified pig's ears. You draw, again, dehydrate those, and you've got a nice rawhide chew for them. So, you know, kind of looking around on the internet, and obviously there are companies that are selling these same things, and I could probably make about $30 from each individual rabbit just from selling those as dog treats. You know, it's still, like I said, haven't done it yet, but theoretically, if I can make $30 for a rabbit and still get the meat versus $30 from selling it live and get nothing else in return, I'll gladly take that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I kind of stumbled on that with chickens when we don't want to really do chickens. We want to do ducks. We have like 70 chickens.
Right.
And I had a whole bunch of pullets that were like 12, 14 weeks. So they were like, you know, a month and a half at most from laying. We put them on Craigslist for $25.
Mm-hmm.
They were gone.
Right.
Like they were gone. And this is before COVID. So it wasn't that whole rush.
Right.
And I'm like, you play hell to get $25 for a pasture dressed chicken, but you can put them up as pullets about to lay. And people were like mad. Like, you're out of them. You said you had seven. Yeah, but they're gone. Like, that was last week. They were, and I don't know that you could do that nonstop, but you could certainly pulse through.
Right.
And that's also kind of my thing with, and I wasn't really, I should have thought of what I was asking when I said about cutting the cost, because it's what I do with fish. We sell a koi or two mm-hmm. a year or a goldfish or two a year, and yuppies pay for the fish food.
Yeah.
Right. So you're selling to dog owners, right, when you're selling these scrap pieces and all, which is kind of cool, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. Like, it's and people pay stupid prices.
I think it's literally
pig ears sell for $3 or something for a pig ear, you know.
Oh.
I love my dog, but if there's a place called Russell Feeds and they sell this stuff in bulk really cheap, and if it wasn't for that, they'd never see one.
Really?
You know, yeah, they sell the pig noses, right?
I've seen those.
Pig noses were like 79 cents a piece.
Right. Yeah.
It's
crazy.
We have a lot of company come, and I'll go buy a bag full of those things because you give the dog one of those and they're good for 45 minutes.
Right. They are content. Yeah. And that's the thing, like with just pricing online, those rawhide, those chews from the skin and the rabbit heads, I mean, those are going for like $15 a pop.
Yeah.
Online.
Yeah.
I mean, easy. And so, heck yeah, I can even, you know, I'm not online. I'm just cheap. I'm just looking to make a little bit of cash to pay for them, you know. I'll throw them up $10. There you go.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
You get a deal. I make money. It's a win-win. Everyone's happy. And the dog is very happy.
And so, you mentioned buying bales of hay.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're not doing pellets at all then? You're doing just hay?
I do. No, it's hay and pellets.
Okay.
I just buy a low quality, orchard grass hay.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need anything. I don't need the high, you know, alfalfa or anything like that
because I'm
eating the pellets and all that. This is just the roughage for them, you know, something to chew on their teeth. I mean, I give them like wood blocks and things like that in the cages, but still just that extra roughage for them. That's it. Just the hay and the pellets. And then, you know, I'll go out and get some greens from them from the garden or scraps if, you know, from making dinner or something like that on every once in a while. So, keep it simple. And plus on top of it, one of my daughters, she helps me out a lot with them. It's actually, we're transitioning into making the rabbits her responsibility. And so again, that just keeps it simple and straightforward for her too. You don't have to worry about her going crazy and picking the wrong plant or anything like that, or feeding them too much. So it's nice and easy for her. Here's a quarter cup in the morning, a quarter cup in the afternoon, and they're fat and happy.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about pellets. They're easy to quantify the,
yep,
the volume, which to me, even if you're doing 100% feeding from the land, mm-hmm, you should still have pellets because you might like want to leave.
Yes.
And Bill or Tom might come to watch your rabbits for you, and you don't have to explain anything. Go in the bin,
yep,
fill this cup, and dump it in this hopper, and do that once a day until I come back.
Yep.
Right. Anybody much that can't pull that off, you don't want them watching your place anyway.
Right. Right. You know? Yeah. And even when I was predominantly feeding from my property, that's exactly what I did because. Yeah. I was, most animals, you know, there's always that transition. You don't want to just change food up on them, willing, yeah, especially with rabbits. That's one of the biggest killers of rabbits is digestive issues. Because, I mean, they don't burp, they don't fart. So yeah, if there's gas buildup, they're going to explode.
They're also kind of like cats with if you change their food really fast, they're like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, they're picky eaters.
That. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, they have standards. They're like, come on.
Yeah, I'm not used to this.
Yeah,
Q and A here, and I know we've hit some of this. We may just comment on it real quick if we've already hit it. You did comment on this, but it'd be a good one to repeat. What kind of rabbits do you keep?
So I have New Zealand California hybrid. That's one of my does and my buck, and then my second doe. I actually a friend of mine, a coworker of mine, gave her to me, and she is a silver Rex.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what she told me, so I'm not 100% positive, but she's definitely, is size-wise, she's a little bit smaller than my California New Zealands, but she's a great mom, so I think that more than makes up for the slightly smaller size.
And she doesn't try to kill you.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly. There is no blood drawn with her. You can actually pick her up and hold her. She's pretty calm and chill. All of her kits are really chill. Like I said, she's a great mom, super easy breeder. The first time I went to breed her, I mean, it was 2 seconds, and she was already bent down, you know, back up, tail up. She's ready to go. Versus, you know, the one that was the one that she replaced, you know, she'll die first. Death before breeding.
You needed the knights to help out, right?
Yes, that would have been helpful.
The holy hand grenade, right? We needed that.
Holy hand grenade of Antioch. That's
Oh my gosh. So let's we hit this really good, so we'll just repeat it here. Hanging Laundry asks, what's the slaughter method he uses? The hopper popper. We just, they're like $100, not necessary.
Yeah.
Club to the back of the head and
done.
I think there's a place for that. Honestly, if I did them here, I'd probably 22 them in the head.
Yeah.
Because I can.
Right, exactly.
You know, yeah. With a suppressor, you hear the firing pin is louder than the round.
Right. You know. That you mentioned that setup, and I'm sitting there like, man, I think I might buy me one because, again, I've got all the fields behind me. It's not like I'm going to hit anyone.
Yeah.
As long as no one hears this, and I need one. I sit on the back of my deck. I need one to just pink those wild rabbits that keep eating my garden up.
Yeah. They're edible, too, I'm just saying. And,
right, exactly.
Suppressors now, you get them approved, your stamp approved in like a day.
Right. I remember you saying that. Yeah.
It could be like 6 months. And I think it's the theory I've heard from J.R. Haley is that they're really shitting a brick that the whole thing might get taken away.
Mm-hmm.
That SCOTUS might say, no, you don't need a stamp to own a suppressor. No, you don't get to regulate this. And so if they speed it up, they can make as much money off of it as possible before it goes away.
Right.
Because I'm sure they're never rebating the tax. Because that's what it is. It's a tax.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a fee. It is a straight. It's called a tax stamp for a reason.
Yeah, right. But, right.
You know.
Get what now?
Let's see. I'm not too. This is from Fred. He says, I am not too far in Bowie, Maryland. I live on a cul-de-sac, no HOA, but lots of rules. Glad to hear your idea. So it's really not a question there. But
yeah, I'm glad if someone gets some use out of it. Go for it, Fred.
If he can do it, you can do it, Fred.
Yeah.
I'll say that. Does he supplement feed to save on rabbit food? We've hit that really good. So yes.
Yes.
But it's just pretty cheap to feed them anyway. Are there any photos of the tub set up used to separate poo and pee?
I don't have any. I can definitely get some and send them your way if you want to post whatever. But it's literally 240-gallon totes. You stack them up on top of each other and drill holes on the one that's on top. That's
basically the pee's just flowing through the poo and ending up in the bottom.
Yeah.
Is there anything in the bottom, like a carbon source or whatever?
I do throw some of my wood chips that I get. Okay. I'll just do a very light layer in both bins. But like you said, because they're on top of each other, you don't have much room.
Yeah.
So I'll just do a very light layer where the pee sits. And then, another layer within the tub where the actual poop is, just in case. Like, I've had a couple times where the rabbits are thumping and hopping around and one of the hoses from the water tubs will pop out. And so now I have 5 gallons of water that just dumps into there. So that'll kind of help negate a little bit of that smell and soak up some of that. And just so it doesn't get stinky as quick. Really easy setup. If you put two totes together, you got it.
Fred asks, would Velcro strips work? And I tried to follow up with him. I didn't get any answer, but I think he was talking about when you're talking about using the carabiners.
I think so too. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It could.
If you do that, that's the thing.
Exactly. That's my concern, is they would tear that up pretty stinking quick.
And it would probably not even be initially to get out, because they're kind of like, oh, what is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they use their teeth like we use our fingers, and they're like, oh, look, stuff comes out of that. Oh, that's interesting. Maybe I should. Oh, look, now I can get out.
100%. I mean, they did that with my old tarp backdrop that I had. Man, I don't even sometimes know how they got a hold of it. But I'd come in the morning and there'd be just shredded pieces of blue pool tarp all over the place. I'm like, come on, guys, stop it.
Yeah.
It'd be great, I think.
When you were talking about that, you also talked about the water lines and them chewing the water lines and draining everything.
Yeah.
So I thought of, when you were saying that, I thought of like a solution people could use if they have that issue. If you know anybody that's like an electrician or a handyman, and just ask them for some scrap flex, like the flex wire that has the galvanized wrap around
it.
You only need a couple feet. You only need where they can reach.
Mm-hmm.
Just yank the copper out of it and shove the wire line through it, and they're not going to get through that.
That's genius. That'd be great. Yeah, I mean, mine works, like I said, I just got
to drink. If it works, leave it alone. I'm just saying, if you have a problem with anything eating water lines, because lots of things eat water lines, you know, I've got a coil, like a 12-foot coil of that sitting out behind my hot tub from when the guy put because the hot tub needs its own circuit.
Right.
And I just left it back. I'm like, I'll use it for something someday. And I'm like, now I know what to do with it. Right. And if you know anybody that's an electrician or does electrical work, like handyman or whatever, they all, like, you end up with a piece of it and you're like, this isn't really good for anything anymore.
Yeah.
And 50-foot coil and you use 47-foot.
And I know a couple electricians. I could probably get some. That's a great idea. I like that.
Hanging Laundry says, I have to admit the typical rabbit cage seems small to me. Don't the breeders get bored and cooped up? I think that's probably, I've not done rabbits, but it's probably a lot like if you're dealing with chickens. Like, I've raised chickens in a 4x8 chicken tractor, and they're happy as they can be. And if you ever set them free for a couple weeks and you stick them back in there, then they're like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
But if they've never known a different life, they don't seem to really care to me. Most rabbits I've seen in rabbit setups, they don't seem like they're really distressed by being in there. And I guess the other thing with a rabbit is, they're a den creature. Yep. Whenever I've seen a wild rabbit out and about, it's always pretty freaking paranoid.
Yep.
And it's only out because it needs to eat. You don't see them, like, taking laps around the yard or something for fun.
Right.
And I'm sure when they're babies, they play a little bit, because play is universal with mammals. But I think most adult rabbits, if you put a food bowl right outside their burrow, they probably wouldn't even venture out very far. They kind of like that protected feeling, right?
They like that security, yeah.
I mean, what eats rabbits?
Everything
that can catch a rabbit.
Everything eats rabbits, yeah. Exactly. My kits, they have no problem, but they're all in cages together. Like I said, at the very least, they'll have one of their siblings with them at all times. And they'll run around, like I said, they'll run around and play.
Yeah.
My breeding trio, they're pretty content being chill on their own. Like I said, I'll throw in They all have wood blocks to chew on, or I'll throw in some paper towel rolls and toilet paper, stuff like that, for them to toss and tear up. But otherwise, they're pretty content and happy. And like I said, my cages, they're, I don't remember my exact amount. I should have written that down. I don't know why I didn't think about that. But they're about 3 feet long by probably about 2 foot wide or so. And they're, you know, maybe a foot and a half, 2 foot tall.
Yeah.
Like they're good sized rabbit, you know, cages for my rabbits. I mean, I probably wouldn't do anything much bigger than my, you know, my California, New Zealand's, but like, I definitely wouldn't do like Flemish Giants or anything like that in those. Yeah. They are perfectly content. They like that security, that closeness. Like I said, most of my rabbits, they're pretty chill and tame. They don't, one of my does, she's a little timid. She'll run at first, but once you start petting her, she's good to go and content. And that's the thing too. Like we handle all the rabbits.
Yeah.
You know, just that makes life easier on us when it comes time to, you know, if we need to get them out of the cage or for whatever reason. But also, you know, it's fun. They're fun. You know, there's a reason they're pets. You know, people raise them for pets. So they seem pretty content, and we haven't had any real issues, it seems like, with them being bored. Or because with rabbits, they are, I mean, you can notice it. They've got personalities. They'll be mopey. They won't eat. And we've never had any problems like that for at least that reason. There've been, you know, like some couple times I've been sick with ear mites and jazz like that.
Yeah.
But never because of board.
Amy here says during the summer it's so hot they like to just lay there in their cage anyway. She gives hers pine cones and branches, let them burn through some chewing energy. They like toys. She says she gives them tuna cans to play with.
Ooh, that's a good idea, Amy. I like that. I'll have to try that.
In like zookeeping, I think they call it enrichment.
Yeah.
You know, they take the bear and they like stick peanut butter inside a thing. It has to work to get it out or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's what my daughter, she'll take, cut like paper towels up and make little, like shove them together. And you know, again, put a little treat or something in there that she'll give that to the rabbits for that exact thing. You know, how do you get the treat out? So a lot of little things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's good with any animals. Give them something to do. I use my chickens for composting, like you're using them as slaves. They like it. They're happy in there. I don't make them do it. I got seven Jersey Giants and they came out of the coop today. And last night when I put them to bed, I took the compost tub out and dumped it. And they were there for 20 minutes before they went on about their day because there's fresh stuff there.
That's perfect.
They like it, you know. What's your winter protocol, K-Mon? Yes.
Honestly, winter's the easy time. Yeah. You know, they are, I mean, obviously the height of winter. So again, with Virginia, we have like right now we're sitting at about 100 degrees with, you know, Lord help, I don't know what the humidity is. We'll say 112. I don't know. Stupid hot, stupid humid. The rabbits right now are miserable. They won't breed because, you know, they're furry. Who wants to, you know, do the dirty when you're hot and sweaty? Like, this is just unpleasant for everyone. But during the winter, they're really great. As long as you've got a good mom, you know, I've had the first time my doe threw a litter, it was during the winter. And they did die, but she was new. She didn't know what to do. But now I have no problems, you know, with them having litters during the winter. You give them their nesting box, you throw plenty of straw in there. They'll pluck fur about a day or two before it's time for them to have the litter, and it's good to go. Winter's when they do well, in all honesty.
People ask me the same thing about ducks, and I'm like, winter's the easy. Like,
exactly.
When you see a duck pant, you know that's pretty bad.
Right.
You know? You see a duck or a chicken panting, that's not good. I've seen them in the winter when it's like freaking 15 degrees out, but it's sunny, and they'll be sitting in the shade.
Right.
I got it. I don't need you. You know?
I'm great here. Yeah. Whereas during the summer, you know, like I saw someone through, I'm putting, you know, frozen ice, water bottles and things like that in there to keep them cool. And I've got, like with my setup, I have three fans pointing, you know, up top, pointing directly down on the top cage, and then two other fans to the side. Oh, one fan, I need to get a second fan, and just simple box fans blowing on that lower cage just for the airflow. And I mean, this is the time of year when I feel bad for them. Like, that's rough, guys.
years ago, Dorothy put up a picture on her Instagram, and it was she put a 1 gallon frozen bottle in chicken tractor with baby. We made the stupid decision to brood chickens, and it was too hot already. And like three of the little chickens are sitting on top of the bottle. But several of them are down on the ground, and they had literally backed up and put their butthole up against the ice. Yep. And she said something like, this is what happens when a giant gives you an ice bottle and it's 105 out, you know. And they were happy, man. They were like,
this is great. Yeah.
They figured it out. That's the thermostat for the body right there.
Yep.
I think I missed it, Angie says, but do you sell for breeding or for pets or both? I guess you probably sell a rabbit for whatever the hell anybody wants.
I sell a rabbit. I mean, to me, once that transaction's made, that's up to you. That's between you, the rabbit, your God, and morals.
Yeah,
like that's at that stage of the game.
You can take them home and eat them. You can feed them to your dog. You can keep them as a pet. You can use them to make more. That's your business.
Exactly. Yeah. Now let's be honest. With mine, obviously, mine are made for eating. I mean, they get to probably be about 15 pounds fully grown. They're not small rabbits.
They're
big, not your cute little mini lops or anything like that.
Yeah.
But if you want them for a pet, go nuts. I don't care.
You're processing them at like a 5 pound weight because that's kind of the sweet spot of you've done enough work, you get a good carcass, and you got a tender rabbit.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I know their feed ratio gets worse.
Yeah.
Once you get past that stage, like you said, their meat's tougher. Like you have, a fryer, a broiler, and a stewer. Yeah, that's it. You know, just because a fryer, you can almost treat it like chicken. You have to cook it a little bit longer, but otherwise it pretty much cooks up like chicken. Where a stewer and the other ones, you got to let them slow cook for time because they get tough. And on top of it, there can be a pain in the butt. I shouldn't say a pain in the butt, but more of a pain to skin because now the skin is really attached.
Yeah.
You know, when they're that 12, 14 weeks old, I mean, it's taking a shirt off.
It's done.
You know, whereas the other ones you kind of yank in and you're trimming around and so the only reason I would grow one out that big is I did have one. I'm an idiot and I left the skin out and it went bad because I got distracted. But the only reason I grow one out that far is to tan it.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why.
Yeah, I was gonna say like skinning a young one is like skinning a cottontail. You can literally do it without a knife if you.
Just about. I mean, you got to cut around the hocks and
But skinning a cull, an adult, is more like skinning a squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're talking about. You got your gambrel and you're literally like a little deer and you're,
it's a pain.
It's just hard. What happens if you just jerk and you force it, you end up pulling meat. I'm sure you know that, but yeah.
Oh gosh. Every time.
Like, well, just pull harder. Well, it doesn't work that way. You start ripping meat with the hide and that's a mess, and you'll never get that meat back to the way you wanted it.
Honestly, that happens to me it's so frustrating all the time, especially when I first start. You'll skin around the hocks on the hind leg, and then I'll slit up, from the belly button all the way up, belly button area. But getting it down their rear legs, that happens to me every time. You'll start seeing that skin bulge out, and then you're trying to cut it real quick, but and my big thing is if you yank it, especially when they're older, now the big concern is just tearing open their guts.
Yeah, that's
because I've had that happen once when I was yanking it, and it's just cool. There's everything's all right there, and it kind of messes everything up. I don't deal with the older ones too much.
Adventure Frog, are you parting out or freezing whole?
So at this stage, I'm parting out now. For a time I was freezing whole, but that very, very, very quickly eats up space.
Yeah.
Because in all honesty, like you get a carcass, a fairly big carcass.
Yeah.
When you break it down, there's still a lot of carcass left because you're getting, your front legs, your hind hocks and the loin along the back. And then there's a little like loin piece on the bottom inside that you can get.
That's it. Tenderloin.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Delicious. But so now you're left with, you got the whole rib cage and this big old spine. So,
and the ribs aren't going to do nothing for you. They're
right.
Ribs on a deer are slim pickings. Ribs on a rabbit is just not a thing.
That's bone broth at that stage of the game. That's all that is. So yeah, I part them out because, yeah, freezing whole. And we don't have a deep freeze. We have a second fridge freezer combo that we use. Excuse me. And yeah, so part them out. It saves so much space.
I do the same thing with cold birds. One, because of how I do them. But the other side of it was when I did meat chickens for a couple years. And if you freeze them whole, it's fast.
Right.
And you can always part them out when you thaw them out. But if I decided I wanted to make something and I needed, you know, four leg quarters, well, now I got to take out two chickens and I got to defrost this whole bird. And now I have the rest of the bird I got to do something with. And I got to use it like this week, where when I parted it out, it saved space, but it also gave me more flexibility. You know, I might put four leg quarters into a bag, and if I needed eight, you just take two bags of leg quarters. If I wanted breast to use for something, you take, you know, a bag or two of breast, and that made actually utilizing it later a lot more efficient.
Yeah, yeah, and that's I mean, that's exactly how we do it. For that, I mean, that's another reason why, because it is just more, and especially with my family. I have family of six, and so we're usually using two rabbits at least to really feed everyone. So yeah, parting them out, super easy. You know, you grab
a
bag,
a lot of space saved, a lot,
Now,
Le Petit Jardin says, where are you located? I got here late. He's in Northern Virginia.
Yeah, technically in the, like right in that D.C., Virginia, Maryland region, right on the outskirts.
North of Richmond area.
Yep. Just, I think Richmond's what, babe, about an hour southwest of me, roughly.
And what kind of feeder do you do? So you kind of explain that. You explain it real quick here at the end.
Yeah. So I have my hay feeder. Like I said, when I bought my cages, there was a hole cut out for them to put in a pellet feeder. I didn't have the pellet feeders. I wasn't buying them. So I just took some extra fencing that I had and just made a curved thing to hold the hay. And there were issues with that, rabbits escaping, but, you know, we blocked that off. And so it makes great hay feeder. And then honestly, I have, you know, you go buy a little metal dog bowl from the dollar store and throw it in there. Yeah. And for the most part, that works. My one Rex doe, she's a brat, and she'll actually is greedy. And when she has kits, she'll yank that bowl away from the kits and spill it everywhere. But other than that, it's cheap, it's easy, and it works. And on top of it, once they're done, that's again kind of a toy for them. That's the tuna can, basically. They'll grab that and throw that around and play with it. And so kind of a twofold little piece there.
I got you. Well, hey man, Billy, thank you for this. This was a great interview, and it was different than the other two. So now we have multiple ways people can look at this and figure out what works for them. And that was my hope of doing this series, and you ended up as the cleanup batter, and you did a great job, so thank you for that.
Hey, thank you, Jack. I appreciate you being able to bring me on, and that's been a pleasure, and I've loved this series. This has been great for me. You know, definitely some new ideas, so hopefully someone got some use out of it, and, you know, someone else will dive into the foray of raising rabbits.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Jack.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in today. I hope you guys did enjoy the show today. I want to remind you, as always, you can always help us out just by starting your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's tspaztspaz.com. You go there, you'll find all my product reviews and everything that I recommend and links to buy them. And if you just start your shopping there, no matter what you buy, even if it's not something that I recommended, if you buy it at Vore or Amazon, you will help us out. And you can get really great information there, because if I wouldn't spend my money on it, I wouldn't recommend it to you. Today's item of the day, these keep going out of stock and coming back in and then going on sale and going off sale, but they're on sale again. They're in stock again. It's the Victorinox 6-inch semi-stiff boning knife. You're butchering rabbits, this thing will work great. If you're cutting up larger cuts of meat, like a whole rib primal or something like that off of a cow, it'll work great for that. In fact, it's going to become your go-to knife for all things meat, trimming, and breaking down if you pick one of these up. I've seen them sell for as much as $40. They're on sale right now for like $23, $24. And since I brought this around, I've heard from a good dozen people who are professional meat cutters say, I use that knife every day. I've heard from at least a couple that said when they went to school for it and they were given certain things on the first day of school, and one of them was this exact knife. It's just that good. The semi-stiff is kind of the perfect balance in this configuration. It lets you get down on bone. It gets you a little bit of flex in the blade, but you give enough stiffness that you're sure of where that blade is and you don't end up, you know, cutting yourself. So definitely check these out and consider shopping at tspaz.com whenever you can buy anything online, because it helps us out. And again, it doesn't cost you any more. In some cases, it may save you some money or some mistakes. The other thing you can do to help us out, become a member. Member Support Brigade is an awesome program. I put it together back in 2010. We've been running it 14 years. I think I've been asked for a refund on it like twice, and I just did it without even – and neither one was because they were unhappy with it. They were mad at something I said, and they wanted their money back. So here's your money back. Go away. It's a great program. It provides a lot of discounts. If you use the discounts, you get your money back, and you support my program, which is, you know, a hell of a lot better than asking for donations or something like that. So do consider becoming a member if you haven't done so yet. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com. Click on members or go to /members there, either way, and you'll find out all the vendors, all the discounts we give, all that stuff. Sign up and help us out. With that, I'll be back tomorrow with an expert counsel Q&A show for the week. Then we will do a Friday flashback, and we've wrapped up yet another week. Thanks for tuning in today, guys. I will catch you with that expert show tomorrow.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.